Thanks for joining another conversation with SYD Life. Over the next few weeks, we're diving into a short series on marriage and family. We'll be looking into building a healthy marriage, raising kids, blending families, and becoming a step-parent, as well as healing from divorce. Join us now for part one of our conversation on building a healthy marriage with Bernie Kelsey and Bill Golly.
Hello, everyone. Here we are at another episode of SYD Life. I'm Bernie Kelsey, and today I'm joined by the wonderful Bill Golly, and we're looking forward to this conversation today, checking out a very big topic, I think, on marriage and how to build a healthy and strong marriage. So welcome, Bill.
Well, thank you, Bernie. It's wonderful to be here. And you're right, what an amazing topic for a time like we've just all come out of and looking for this wonderful future together. So happy marriage.
Happy marriage, life. Happy life. Well, that's great. Well, Bill, why don't we just find out a little bit about you. But you're married to the beautiful Stephanie.
I am, and she is beautiful. Yes. We've been together forever. We were very young when we met, so I confess she was 16, I was 19, and we've been together ever since. And so that's 36 years ago now, which is just beautiful. So, and I have three boys, two grandkids.
Wonderful.
No longer have a pooch, unfortunately. Aww. He's gone to doggy heaven, but that's the way of life, isn't
it? Yes, it is. And so you've got two married kids, I believe, and one's engaged?
Yeah, one's engaged. Yeah. And, we're still waiting for the date. It'll come, but they're definitely engaged. And, two grandsons. So beautiful. It's a beautiful time of life.
It is. Isn't grandparent land wonderful?
Well, it is. Yeah, and people used to joke and say, you know, yes, you can give them back. And I so get it now because, the kid comes in and within 3 minutes our home is chaos, everything on the floor. It's just, so yes, it is lovely to have him, but it's always nice to be able to
hand them back.
I know, right?
I love it. We've got seven grandkids, Mark and I, and similar to you and Stephanie, we've had a nice long arc of marriage that we're coming from. So this December we celebrate 44 years of of marital bliss.
Oh, well, that is just wonderful. You don't look that old, Bernie, I should just say. Yeah, for those who are listening, 44, I heard somewhere once someone say that you can tell people who've been in a long-term relationship, a happy relationship, just by their faces. There's there's an ease and a softness and a beauty about people who've been loved and loved well.
Yes.
Have you noticed that?
I think it's true. Yes.
Yeah.
The stress and the strain. I mean, there's a lot of challenges around this topic today, marriage. Hopefully we can add some wisdom and some hope for people listening. But I guess probably one of the things to sort of kick off with is what would you say a healthy marriage or a strong marriage looks like?
Yeah, look, that is a great question. And honestly, I as you know, I brought my cheat sheets with me here.
Yes, good.
And, you know, I could look down at those and say, well, you know, I've got at least 18 or 20 or 30 points that we could go through. But really, at the end of the day, what is a happy marriage? Well, people talk about getting through life. They talk about surviving, you know. And, you know, if that was all there was, I suppose that's okay. Yeah, you survived, you got through. But I don't think that's the best life. I think the best life is where you actually thrive. And it's sort of like, you know, in the movies, you have these alternate universes and alternate realities, and there's this version of you or there's that version of you. Well, imagine the best version of you. And I think when we talk about what is a good marriage, it's not necessarily a marriage without conflict or a marriage without difficulty. Right. It's actually the marriage that's going to help you be the best version of you, the person you were made to be. And that's going to look different for each of us, isn't it?
Truly, yes. Yeah, I mean, each person is unique. So therefore, every combination, every marriage is going to be so unique as well. But I love that point, though, that we really can thrive. We can have a thriving marriage.
Yeah.
And I guess the point here is it's not perfect, but it's right for you.
That's right, because, yeah. I mean, the reality is as great as we are, as great as you are, if I asked Mark, he would tell me, yeah, look, I love her to bits, but no, she's not perfect,
yes.
And I'm not perfect, and therefore, by definition, our relationship is going to be imperfect.
Mm.
But it's in that imperfection that tremendous growth and opportunities, insight and learning can occur in that space. And it really is about how you think about it. So, you know, we talk about people who are glass half full, glass half empty, but there's in that mix, there's this lovely space where if you can develop a mindset that sees the challenges of life as actually God-given opportunities, and difficult relationships can be like that, you'll find they can be your finest moments, depending on the choices you make. And failure is actually part of that process. So failure in and of itself is not a failure.
Right, yeah. That you can get back up after that failure.
Absolutely.
In fact, it's actually what builds you for the next season or whatever. I mean, it's true, isn't it? It's what we, you know, the good times, we all want to live in the good times.
Yep.
But actually, when you think about it, I know looking back over 44 years of marriage and raising three kids, and our kids are all married now.
Mm.
Like I said, they've got their own children. It's fun watching your own kids parent as well, and watching their relationships develop. But we get back up. But it's the things that we walk through, the tough times, I've found that's where I've been changed the most, grown the most.
That's right.
I want the sunshine, but it's actually probably been in the cloudy periods, the dark moments.
And I guess that's because the easy times, the good times, really just affirm.
Yes.
They don't really challenge you or add to you. They don't force creativity out of us. The difficult times, and particularly in relationships, demand us to become more than we are and to address issues that, you know, most people are fight or flight or freeze or you know, or fawn, one of those four areas.
Yeah.
But few of us actually embrace the danger or embrace the difficulty, as I said earlier, as a God-given opportunity to become more than I am and to help my partner become a better version of themselves as well. And I think that's, when we talk about secrets to good marriage, good relationship, because I understand some of our listeners may not be in a marriage, the classical marriage relationship, but they might be in a committed relationship with another person.
Right.
But the key to, you know, is in these marriage relationships is that we want win-win.
Yes.
We don't want a I grow at your expense type scenario. No, I actually want you to be the best version you can be, because when you're the best you can be, you empower me to be the best that I can be. And when I'm the best that I can be, guess what? I empower you to go on to even greater levels beyond what you imagine possible.
Mm.
And I can tell you, being married to an amazing woman, it's true, as sickening as it sounds, you know, when people say, you complete me and blah, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
It's amazing. She does bring out the best in me. She challenges me. We are different people. We're different temperaments.
Mm.
But having her in my life means that I have become a better man than I ever could have been.
Yes.
But that's only because I recognize that she's been placed in my life to help grow me, and I'm there to help grow her.
Mm. I guess it's like seeing the gift of each other for each other.
Yeah.
And that's when you kind of move out of like a consumer kind of relationship and more into that, you know, like you're here for me 100%. But it's like, hey, we're living in a different space here. We're in, dare I say, sacrificial space.
Absolutely,
you know,
absolutely.
I'm laying my life down for you, And this is the commitment I've made.
Yeah, now you're talking an uncommon language here, Bernie.
Right.
I mean, we live in times where it very much is about me and my happiness, mm-hmm. and that is the, you know, the plumb line of importance, and what is sacred is what yep. works for me.
Yes.
Previous generations, of course, would have just shook their head and said, what are you guys talking about? That's crazy, yes. crazy talk. Mm. Because they understood that actually the secret to happiness is in serving others, is in giving your life. Mm. As you say, you use the language of sacrifice. Mm. Now, in relationships, and when we talk about, you know, is there a difference between marriage and just a committed relationship? Yes, there is. If we're talking about what is it that makes marriage distinctive, it really is that I am committed to you mm. for life, mm. come what may, hell or high water, I am here and I'm not going away and I will love you and I will love you and I will love you even if it kills me.
Yes.
And that's, yeah, that is sacrificial
that's
stuff, isn't it?
That's sacrificial love yeah. right there. I mean, earlier you were talking about obviously making each other better in that sense, in that commitment. In your own relationship, mm-hmm. Bill, with Stephanie, how have you seen that, you know, in a practical way? How have you lived that out in
yeah.
daily life?
Well, I'll share a couple of examples. Yeah. One of how I think I've managed to help her and the other mm. how she's helped me.
Yeah.
If you were to look at Stephanie, you would think, yeah, she's gorgeous, she's successful, she's confident, mm. she's an amazing woman. Mm. But, you know, as kids, we don't always start off that way, do we? And mm. as a 16-year-old, Steph, you know, she was confident. She wasn't, you know, in a sense, struggling in any way that I could see. Mm. But like most kids, most young people, we don't always see what we are. Mm. So I spent the first, I don't know, 10, 15 years of my marriage saying to Stephanie every day just how beautiful she was. Mm-hmm. And I said to her every day, I love you. Now, initially it was great. I'm sure she loved it. Then came the, you know, the yes, thank you, darling, eye yes. rolling stage. You know, it's wearing thin, but I persisted.
Good on you, Bill.
And I persisted because I wanted her to know what I could see. I wanted her to know
beautiful.
What she really was, and I wasn't convinced that she actually saw how beautiful she was or really understood the depth of my love. Now, that I may be wrong there, but that was, as a young man, that was my feeling. Mm. And I noticed that, and I say this to her and to others, that I think one day she woke up and believed me.
Believed it.
And became even more beautiful and even more lovely.
Yes.
So I hope that's something I was able to put into her life, just using something we may refer to later, a love language known as using words of affirmation. I affirm you by what I say to you or what I, and I can, you know, fail to affirm by what I don't say to you. So I made it my mission to say it every day for 15 years. It may have been longer, it may have been a little bit less. I honestly don't remember, but I love you and you are so beautiful. And I meant it. I meant what I said.
Yes.
Fast forward many, many years, mm-hmm. I was the older guy. She was only 16. I was 19. So I knew everything and she was just a baby, and.
But you told me that you waited 4 years before you got married.
That's right. That's
because
right.
Because of how young you were. When
that's
you
right.
Down,
so yeah. She was 20 and I was 23 when we got married.
Right.
But back then, you know, things were a little bit different. When the dinosaurs walked on the earth and we were young people, you know, women deferred to men a lot more and the man was the leader and he was supposed to know and decisions, and, you know, we were never strong into that. We tried to do things together as a couple, make decisions together.
Right.
But I've noticed over the years, as Stephanie has stepped into her own identity and her own competencies, mm-hmm. as she's read and grown and really her faith has gotten so much stronger, as a person, she's become much more capable. And one of the ways that's come out is her willingness now, one of her favourite statements is clear as kind, right? Clarity. Rather than holding disappointments in or holding in things that she would like to say to me, now she's saying them to me. And sometimes it'll be, you know, hard for me to hear that I failed her or I've, jumped in and, you know, tried to rescue her when really she didn't want that.
Yep.
It's like you don't need to mansplain it and you don't need to do it for me. I was just telling you where I was at.
Right.
And that kind of feedback from your partner, that willingness to speak with love but to speak clearly and firmly and kind, that's actually helped me. Because I've realized that even though here I was thinking I'm this modern guy who is all for, you know, equality and at one level believe that, yet entrenched into my character and my behavior were the old ways of my parents and previous generations where I was the guy and I make the decision and I do the rescuing and I, you're following
yes,
me?
Yes, totally.
And so for Stephanie to speak up,
yes,
and to do it means that I have the opportunity to look at myself and to become a better version of me.
Yeah, fantastic. And, of course, you've just brought up the whole idea of when we marry, when we come together as two individuals, we fall in love, we walk down the aisle together, and we start out on this great life together. But you realize you're not just married to that person, just jumping into the space of we're all coming from somewhere.
That's right.
And bringing our own family culture that we were raised in, belief systems, ways of doing things, understandings, you know, and suddenly now here we are, a new family unit, having to form all of that. But it's very much working through each other's differences, I guess, seeing those differences.
Well, that's right. See, I think, Bernie, like I worked 25 years in pastoral ministry, done a lot of weddings, a few funerals and lots of baby dedications, but love weddings, one of my favourite things.
Yes.
And in the pre-marriage counselling, you know, one of the questions we always ask is, you know, why did you choose this partner? Why this particular person?
Mm.
You know, the planet's got billions of people. Why this one? And what I'm trying to get to in that question is I'm saying, you know, I'm looking to see whether they say to me, I found the right person, because I don't believe in that. Even if it was true, people change.
That's right.
What was the right person yesterday may not be the right person tomorrow. And so what we want to say to couples, and again, this works whether it's in marriage or whether it's in just a long-term committed relationship. It's not about finding the right person, although there is, you know, legitimacy in that. It's important to find someone you at least like and, you know, some level of compatibility. But the real issue is about being the right person going forward, because it's the choices that I make after my wedding day or after that first date or after, you know, we've decided we're going to be lifelong partners. It's that decision, those decisions that I make every day. And those decisions are either going to be acts of marriage or they're going to be acts of divorce.
Right.
Now, this may seem a little bit weird, but
tell us about that.
Play with me here in this space. When we make a commitment to each other, we're entering into a relationship agreement, or if you like, it's a contractual relationship between two willing people, and no one goes into a relationship thinking, oh, well, you know,
see if it works.
Yeah, it doesn't matter, you know. Yeah. No, we go in hoping and wanting it to work, and we're going to give it our best shot.
Absolutely.
But how do you do that? Yeah. How do you do that exactly? Well, in the case of a wedding, couples stand before the celebrant or the minister, and at the very core of the ceremony, the most beautiful part, the sacred moment, is when they turn and face each other. There's this moment of, and everybody's going, they're about to do it. They're about to do it, and I'm not talking about the kiss. Yeah. They're about to make their vows.
Great.
And in those vows, if they've written their own, and in the weddings I preside over, it's compulsory. You have to write your own vows. Mm. And here's the instruction I give them. I want you to go away and think about what love means to you. Mm-hmm. And the vows are a set of promises about how you intend to love your partner. And on the day, you're going to turn and face each other and you're going to make the most important promise in your life. This is how I will love you for the rest of my life. Mm. I'm going to honor you. I'm going to respect you. I'm going to build you up. I'm going to be faithful to you. I'm going to protect you. Mm. I'm going to be the one you lean on. I'm going to be the one who'll be there for you. Mm. Whether you're sick or whether you're healthy, whether you're rich or whether you're poor, I'm the one who's going to dedicate myself to your success, to you becoming all that God's created you to be.
Right.
And why? Because I am head over heels in love with you. I adore you.
Mm.
And I want nothing but the best for you. So I'm going to give you my best so that you can become everything. And every day you make decisions, choices based on whether you keep those vows or whether you
don't.
Right? Mm-hmm. So I say to the young fellas, you know, first morning after the ceremony, you're on your honeymoon, and she turns to you and she says, "Hi, honey," and her breath stinks like, you know what, you are going to breathe it in as though it was, you know, the winds of heaven. You are not going to go, "Oh, your breath stinks," you know,
Right.
Make a choice of love, right?
So it's choose love.
Choose love.
And
choices of love are choices of marriage.
Yes.
Choices of selfishness are choices of divorce.
Yeah.
And you do enough selfish things in a marriage.
Right.
Or you neglect love long enough and that's how you end up with permanent divorce.
Yeah. Almost like an investment into, you know, that sort of the emotional tank of each other.
Correct.
You know, you're either withdrawing from that.
Yep.
Too great a withdrawal.
Yeah.
Or you're depositing every day into that and building that tank.
Great analogy.
Love tank.
That's right. And that brings us to another point that you and I spoke about the other day, and that is understanding that the way your partner wants to be loved or needs to be loved may be different to how you need to be loved. So my Stephanie used to have this lovely little fridge magnet. I memorized it because I'm a good husband, and it said, "I love hugs and I love kisses, but most of all, I want help with the dishes." What was that about? Right there on the fridge. Well, she existed in a household of men. I have three sons. Even the dog was a boy. So, and here's this solitary, gorgeous woman, and she put this little fridge magnet on the fridge, and I realized her love language was, "I need help. I need someone to help serve."
Yeah.
So. Acts of service is one of those love languages. It could be gifts. It could be quality time, you know, words of affirmation that we spoke of before. Totally. And, of course, my favourite, touch.
Yes, right?
I think a lot of boys love the touch one.
I think
they love the touch. it's in our DNA. We can't help it. But, yeah, it's learn to speak the love language of your partner.
Yes.
And then you're filling that tank, that
filling
beautiful
tank.
Yeah, their love tank gets filled. And, again, the more you empower them, the more they're going to be what you hope and you want them to be.
Yeah, exactly. I wonder if we can jump into the situation when there's levels of conflict coming into the relationship and how we can because everyone's going to go through the struggles and, look, there's lots of challenges out there, pressures that come upon that marriage relationship and changes, like we were talking about before. Mm. You're not static. We're growing, we're changing, hopefully, and there's – as we invest in our marriages, there's a resilience, hopefully, in a healthy, strong marriage, which comes through walking through difficulties. But particularly in conflict, when those seasons or moments arise, what's some advice on how to first approach, you know, difficult conversations or conflict that's arisen.
Yeah, really important point, Bernie, because as I said at the very beginning, we spoke about difficulties can be the real growth opportunities in our lives. Mm. But conflict is one of those things that is inevitable. And different
if you're
people
alive and breathing, yes.
Correct. Different people will show conflict in different ways, much like we express and receive love in different ways. Right. People respond and, you know, show conflict in different ways. So your partner might be the loud, aggressive type, or they might be the very withdrawn and, you know, hide in the corner type, or they might be the passive aggressive type.
Right.
You need to understand, first of all, who you are when it comes to conflict. How do you respond? And then try and identify, well, what is my partner? What's their pattern when conflict happens? Now, when conflict happens, it is rarely because of one person.
Right.
It's a two-way street.
Right.
And so it is critical that we learn how to communicate and communicate what is important.
Yes.
Communicate to get to a win-win situation rather than to communicate to destroy.
Or to win the argument, right?
Which is a way of destroying love, right?
Right, yeah.
It's about, well, I'll feel better about myself by winning the argument, but the whole time I've actually lost my relationship or I'm losing my relationship. What's more important to me?
Exactly.
Winning an argument or actually healing whatever is hurting my heart and my partner's heart. And so communication is very important. And look, most pastors, most marriage therapists, counselors, social workers, psychologists out there, it's not difficult to teach you how to communicate in a manner that the other person actually feels heard, and more than feeling heard, they feel understood.
Understood, yeah.
So learning to reflect back to your partner, you know, what they are feeling because of what they've told you or shown you is just so vital.
So vital, and you really are going to miss it if you're not listening.
Well, that's right.
It's more listening than speaking, isn't it, in these moments?
Absolutely.
And seeking, like you said, Bill, to understand, like, what is this situation right now that we're facing?
Yeah. And why did her doing this or him doing that, why did I get so angry about that? Yes. Is it actually about what they did or said, or is there some deeper issue in my own brokenness?
Right.
Because we know, for example, you know, a lot of anger is because we feel taken for granted, we feel like we've been abused, we feel like we've been unfairly treated.
That's right.
It's actually about us.
It's about us.
Or it's fear in disguise, you know. I'm terrified of where this is going and what this could mean, so I'm going to yell at it. Shoot the messenger.
Exactly.
Right? Rather than hearing the message, which is, hey, there's a point in our relationship that needs some TLC, a bit of tender loving care.
Yeah.
And that means it requires, on my part, humility, because a relationship is always two ways. I have a part to play. And sometimes, honestly, Bernie, our best sometimes isn't enough.
Yes.
And it doesn't mean we've done anything wrong. It just means that we're dealing with a really challenging situation. And do you know, a little analogy.
Okay.
There's your best and there's my best. And if you do your best and I do my best and that's not enough, we think, well, that's it, it can't be fixed. Not so.
Right.
What they discovered was if you take my best and your best and united, the sum of the total is greater than the sum of the parts. So if, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So your best might be 5 and my best is 5 equals 10? No, put it together, it equals 20.
Yes.
There's a synergy, a power in.
Multiplication.
Yes. So when we come to the table with humility, with a renewed intentional trust, and, you know, relationships just don't work without trust.
Right.
Words like faith, we know what it is to have faith in God, but yep. I also need to have faith in you. I need to have faith in my partner that actually she doesn't want to be or he doesn't want to be living like this.
Mm.
They actually want something that I want as well.
Something more.
We just need to find that common ground, maybe get a little bit of help, someone to sit with us and help us see what we can't see.
Yeah, that's a really good point, isn't it? Because sometimes you can work yourself into a muddle.
Yeah.
And just having perhaps good friends in your life that are trusted friends and, you know, maybe it's not even discussing what the issue is, it's just hanging out with other people. And sometimes that can just fix the situation, give you a fresh perspective.
Yeah, and, you know, sometimes there's a scripture that says it's the little foxes that ruin the vineyards.
It's sometimes those things
that have developed over years of being together and you haven't even noticed that they've developed, but anyone on the outside, you know, watching the relationship go, oh, my gosh, that's harsh or that's awkward.
Yes.
But the couple can't see it, mm-hmm. but they nevertheless, they feel the consequence of that little fox in their relationship.
Mm.
So sometimes, as you say, having the humility just to say, hey, let's go see our pastor or let's go see, this good friend or let's go see a counsellor, it doesn't mean we're failures. That's actually takes courage and it's a loving thing to do. It shows, resolve and commitment to the relationship.
And that you're fighting for it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What incredible wisdom and advice. Thanks for listening, and make sure you join us next fortnight for part 2 of this conversation.